You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by Habs.
Hello and welcome to Absent Minded. It's Patrick Bexell speaking, and I'm joined by Matt Mania, the Dizzy Drake, the Matt Drake of Bottom 6 Minutes, the top podcast performer in Hong Kong. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing terrific. I'm absolutely terrific. It's a beautiful day out, and the Habs signed a pretty good value contract too. So I guess we're going to get to that.
Are you trying to push into Vietnam or into Philippines next?
Well, we got Hong Kong on lock. I think mainland China is next. To be honest, we're going big.
We're going for the big case directly. Well, you know, Matt works with finance. We see how he's thinking. It's a good day to be on Hampson's Minded, obviously. And we're joined also by the ever-present Jared Book.
Yes, I am here.
As always, in the background, just being the ghost, the forum ghost of the hockey podcast, right?
I don't know if I'm a ghost. I talk too much.
Well, as
maybe Matt, a friendly ghost, maybe the Casper of this podcast.
Yeah, but I mean, like the ghost of the forum ghosts were friendly to Montreal, right?
Where'd they go though?
Yeah, they stayed in the forum and they turned it into a mall and a movie theater and a bowling alley and a really shitty bar, by the way. I don't know if anybody's listening, if you've been up there, there's like this shit bar in the for the forum is it's horrible.
I don't even know if it's still open. I feel like everything that goes in there closes.
Do they still have that Montreal section of the forum?
Well, yeah. They've got a small section of seats that they left in.
Yeah.
And then they put like some fake people in them and stuff. Like I personally, I think they did a horrible job. They did a complete disservice to the cathedral that was the forum. And you know, my dad's been there. My dad grew up going to games in the forum, and he's like, yeah, this ain't it. And I know there's a bowling alley there. I went bowling there once, and it like the whole time I was there, I was just complaining. I think I probably ruined everybody else's bowling game because I was like sitting there. I'm like, you know what used to happen in here? And now we're fucking bowling. What is this?
Well, the dryness statue is probably there still, right?
I think so. Literally, there's no reason to go there anymore. Like I live in the city and I haven't been there in years. I think the last time I was there. No, can't even think about the last time I was there. I walked by it once.
Last time I was there was the bowling. Before that, I think I saw the first Deadpool movie there. And same thing. I think I was complaining the entire time about what the building used to be and what it should be. And yeah.
One player that didn't get a chance to play there, obviously, was Alex Newhook. Just signed with the Montreal Canadiens a 4-year contract going to the summer of 2027. A $2.9 million per season contract. Initial thoughts?
There's really nothing to not like about this. Like it's a very good contract for the Montreal Canadiens. The odds of him being worth like less than $2.9 million is very, very slim. You can argue he already is a $2.9 million player. Like he doesn't have to grow into this contract at all. So for me, it's even better than the Kirby Tok contract just because it's a little bit lower and there's probably less risk, right? Like Doc was kind of like a reclamation project, but like Newhook, like even if he doesn't improve, and I think there's a lot to say that he will improve in a better situation and a more lenient one, but even if he doesn't, like there's no downside to this contract. Like he's making less than a lot of players who are going to be playing, you know, third, fourth line minutes in the NHL. And he's already there doing that. So for me, no downside at all.
They are betting with the 4-year contract that he will improve. And also there is no rush to improve in a way, because it's not a 2-year contract. You have these 2 years and then you're gone. If you don't succeed, this is, you got 4 years. Make sure it happens during those 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that he took 4 years is also a huge win for the Habs. Like the $2.9 million, I agree with Jared. I think it's pretty tough, pretty unlikely that he's not at least worth that amount. But for me, it was really the 4 years that stood out, because I would have thought he would have stood his ground and wanted just a 2-year, right? A real show-me deal where he can renegotiate after that, because the cap's going to be going up. It's not going up very much this year, but in the next 2 years after that, it's supposed to go up pretty drastically. So I was kind of expecting that when he got signed, it was just going to be two. He was going to get that opportunity. They've already gone out before they even signed the contract, and they said, we want to give this guy top 6 minutes. So for me, if I'm thinking from an agent's perspective, I would have stood my ground hard on 2 years and been like, they're going to give you top 6 minutes. They're going to give you every opportunity to go out there and earn yourself a massive raise after those 2 years. But instead he signs for four. It left me wondering, and I was even talking about this in the EOTP Slack chat, like, did he take a hometown discount? I feel like, you know, he's from Newfoundland, and I know a lot of people from Newfoundland are Habs fans. I wonder if he grew up a Habs fan and if he said, you know what, I'm gonna extend this out a little bit. I'm gonna take that 2.9 for the 4 years. I get some security. The team gets cap flexibility during those 4 years. And, you know, realistically, I think he probably could have signed 2 years and then earned himself more money with a top six spot. I feel like this is almost a discount for the Habs.
He also has won the Stanley Cup. He knows what it takes. And maybe that is the discount a little bit, like Lidstrom did in his last years, et cetera.
Yeah. And they're paying him, Jared mentioned it, right? They're paying him less than they're paying other people that are going to be below him in the lineup. He's getting less than Mike Hoffman, Christian Dvorak, Yoel Armia, and Kirby Dach. Now, Kirby Dach is probably going to be in the top six. I think they may be looking at him to be the number two center this year. But Dvorak, definitely not going to be as high up in the lineup as Newhook. Hoffman, definitely not going to be as high up in the lineup. I think you could even throw Josh Anderson in there and say, and Brendan Gallagher too. And all of these guys making more money than him, and he's probably going to be a little bit higher up in the lineup than them, to varying degrees throughout the course of the season. I mean, I didn't like the trade. I didn't like the trade. And so I'm not going to sit here and try to be a revisionist in terms of the history of what I said, because I did not like the trade. I do not like giving up basically 2 second-round picks for an NHL player. We saw what happened with Andrew Shaw, and I think that was my big gripe with it, was I didn't want to give up those picks. But with this deal, it makes me look back at the trade a little bit more favorably.
He's also negotiating with his old agent. Right. So yeah. it's you know, is it a hometown discount or just kind of like, listen, like, we believe in you, you know, you're going to have a chance to play. You're in a pretty good situation. And the deal expires 1 year before he's an unrestricted free agent. So, you know, he's also betting on himself, even though it's 4 years and it's a little bit more team friendly in that regard. He still has a chance to bet on himself as well. And get a big contract when the 4 years ends.
If I put myself in his shoes and I'm like, if I was in that spot, and I know you already went out to the media and said we want to give this guy first line minutes, I would have pushed for the two and try to renegotiate that sooner. But you got a point there. I mean, he's still kind of betting on himself, but man, I again, all this to say, the deal itself with the amount of years and the amount of dollars that they actually had to commit, it makes me look back significantly more favorably on the trade.
Obviously, he will be an impact player directly. Those two picks that he cost will not be impact players directly for the Montreal Canadiens. So you have that opportunity as well. It opens up quite some interesting thing. And we have to highlight the article by Nathan Nye today, Wednesday, on Eyes on the Prize. Fantastic article. It takes you about 15 minutes to read it. It probably takes another 15 minutes to understand everything in it. Amazing work by Nathan. Go in, read it. It concerns his usage. It concerns who he played with in Colorado, etc., etc. It's also interesting because it really has been an Alex Newhook day. Elite Prospect had their article out, and The Athletic with Arpan had their out. Three different angles. Nathan's is one of those that I always read when it comes to depth analysis in regards to Montreal Canadian players.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Loki. Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki season 2, now streaming only on Disney Plus.
But it does put up, and we see that in the comment as well. How would you put the roster and the lineup for Montreal Canadiens? Let's just say for the first game of the season.
There's so many variables. I really don't think that everyone who is in the lineup right now will be with the Montreal Canadiens when the season starts. Matt mentioned a bunch of those players: Mike Hoffman, Christian Dvorak, Yoel Armia. There's a lot of players there. You know, I don't think they'll trade Josh Henderson. I definitely don't think they'll trade Brendan Gallagher. But I think, you know, there's a lot of guys there, and there's not very many spots available. And the same thing, a little bit to a lesser extent, on defense as well. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I, you know, how much of a factor will waivers be? That's the one thing you have to look at with this lineup, is that, you know, there's a chance that, you know, I don't think that they'll send Juraj Slafkovský to the AHL. I think he'll be, you know, very solidly in the lineup. But if they don't move anybody out and everyone's healthy, they might have to send him down. Same thing with Raphael Harvey-Pinard, to not lose Jesse Ylönen on waivers, as an example. Will they waive one of the other guys, one of the veterans? We saw them do it with Ren Pitlick last year. So a lot of questions with that. But I think it has to start with Suzuki, Caulfield on the top line. I think that they might start with Doc there just because they have other centers there. They might go Newhook there right away as well. Second line, I think like Matt said, Doc is going to be, if he's not on the top line, he'll be that second line center without a doubt. Probably Sean Monahan in there. Maybe Josh Anderson. Probably Juraj Slafkovský in there as well. And then it kind of gets interesting because I feel like there's a lot of interchangeable parts in this lineup, and I'm not really sure of the combinations, but I think Jake Evans probably number three center, maybe if Dvorak isn't around. If he's there, then Dvorak's definitely a number three center. And you know what? That's he's a good number three center. Like, I know that a lot of Canadiens fans have been on him as a disappointment, but he was always going to disappoint when he was playing, not, you know, second line minutes, or asked to do what Philip Deneau did and what Jesperi Kotkaniemi did, as he did in his first year. I think he's fine as a three center, obviously not long term. And then, you know, I mean, how do you find room for all these guys? Like, there's so many players who are so close to the NHL. You know, Farrell played in the NHL last year. Owen Beck, you know, Elias Anderson probably wants to, you know, he told you, Patrick, he wants a long look for the NHL this year. I mentioned Ylönen before, who still needs a new contract. It's going to be very interesting to see how that lineup goes. I don't want to really make a guess right now. And really, I don't think there's a bad answer. I think they're going to have four lines that will, other than the Suzuki Caulfield line, play relatively even minutes and go from there.
I think a lot of it hinges on, you know, before you can even properly project a lineup, is they probably need to move somebody or some buddies. And the other thing is, which center is going to move to the wing? Because you got too many NHL centers right now. You got Suzuki, Doc, Monahan, Newhook, Evans, and Dvorak. Newhook and Doc, we know they can both play the wing. Monahan also, we saw him on the wing a little bit last year, so we know that that can work. If I was to, you know, just do this out of the brain of Matt Drake and say, what would I do? I agree with Jared 100%. Cole Caulfield, Nick Suzuki, those are, they're on your top line. The question is, who plays on the other side? It can't be Josh Anderson. We saw too much of that last year, and we know that it only works in spurts. It doesn't work consistently enough. So Josh Anderson can't be that other guy. So you got a couple of options. You can either put Kirby Doc up there, or you can hope that Sean Monahan can play that side on the right, and put him up there, or Newhook. It's probably one of those three, moving them over to the wing and putting them on the top line. I think that based on what they've said, I think Newhook is probably going to get a look there. So I'd say that's your top line to start the year. Caulfield, Suzuki, and Newhook. I think it's an interesting line. It's something they haven't tried before. It gives Suzuki and Caulfield an opportunity to try and build chemistry with a guy that's going to be around for the next 4 years. I think they'll give it a shot, and I'd be behind giving that a shot. That would leave Kirby Doc centering the second line, and this is a tough one. I think the fan base would love to see Juraj Slafkovský on the left, give him an opportunity for top 6 minutes. You didn't draft him first overall to put him in the bottom six, so I think if you're not going to put him in the top six, then let him have some time in Laval instead, where he can play top 6 minutes. So that being said, if we go perfect world, I'd put Slafkovský on the left with Doc in the middle, and then I'd give him Brendan Gallagher for that net front presence on the second line. Then that brings me to the third line, right? The third line for me, I think Sean Monahan's got to center it. I think this is going to be a line that you're going to rely on a little bit defensively, but at the same time, you want them to be able to exploit. So I would give him Josh Anderson on the right, not going to help him defensively whatsoever, but I think Sean Monahan is good enough in all three zones that he can kind of overcome some of those issues that do arise with Josh Anderson on defense. And then on the left side, this is where we run into, you know, the possibility of bringing in prospects or something like that. But I would give it to Raphaël Harvey-Pinard. I think he's earned an extended look in the NHL. I think he has to be in the opening night lineup. I don't think it would be fair to him to keep him out. He's done enough to earn it. And I would give him third line minutes to start. And then you go to your fourth line, and your fourth line, I've got Jake Evans centering that one. And it's going to be as defensive as you can possibly make it. That being said, you've got some problems on the wing again, because you don't really have any great defensive wingers that you can shove in there. I think it'll probably be Mike Hoffman on the right, but in a perfect world, I would put Mike Hoffman on waivers and I would give Joshua Roy a shot there. I think he's got significantly better defensive chops than people give him credit for. And I'd love to see him get a shot there. Either him or Elinen would be my other choice. I think it's going to be Hoffman, but if it was my pick, it'd be Elinen or Roy. And then on the left, again, a tough one. I think Elias Anderson, as you mentioned, Pat, you already interviewed him. You know he wants to get a shot. If he can earn himself an opportunity coming out of camp, I think he'll get it. Michael Pizzetta is also an option. And then my dark horse candidate would be Emil Heinemann. I think he's supposed to go back to Europe, if I'm not mistaken. Pat, you're going to have to correct me on that. But he was very impressive at camp last year. And I think if he shows up to camp again and really impresses and kind of pushes for a spot, I think there's a possibility that he ends up earning himself a spot there too. The other option could be maybe even Sean Farrell might be able to come up and take that spot. I think some of these spots are going to be up for grabs. And a lot of it, again, is going to be depending on who do they move out. Because I agree 100% with what Jared said. Not everybody that's currently under contract is going to be there on day one. I think there's going to be some movement, whether that is trades or whether that is people going on waivers. Yoel Armia, I'm sorry, but I don't have you in my starting, in my opening night lineup. I don't have you in my lineup at any point this season. I think he's another guy who's got to go on waivers and potentially get buried in the minors or traded if they can find somebody who's willing to take on his contract, which they probably can't. But that covers it for my forwards there. You know, a lot of it requires some things to happen that haven't happened yet, but I think they've got enough bodies. The question is, do they have too many bodies? And what can they do with the extra people so that they can make space for some of these younger players to earn themselves a chance?
First off, we saw some things happening the last two seasons, really, with putting experienced players on waivers, sending them down, and then the trade happened after they've been sent down because they don't have to pass waivers for the new team. That could be an option, obviously, at the start of the season, and obviously putting people on that second to last or last day before the rosters has to be nailed down and hope they go through, because the other teams will also have players that needs to go through. So there are limited spots. That's one thing. The second thing is, I'm not sure who's come with this idea that Emil Heinemann is going back to Europe.
Well, I can't remember where somebody said it to me on Twitter when I put out a few line combos that I said I'd like to see at some point during the season, and people were like, no, Heinemann's going to Europe. And that's why I asked you. You're supposed to clarify that for me. You're my ace when it comes to European news, man.
If you have a valid contract in Europe and sign an NHL deal, the first deal of that contract, you have to go back to Europe instead of going to AHL. That was last year for Emil Heinemann. This year he's AHL or NHL already. I could tell you
beautiful
straight out that Leksand is not counting on Emil Heinemann this year. Because they have replaced him with another fan favorite of the Montreal Canadiens, Lucas Vaidemo.
Ooh.
I like Lucas.
Then that means it's entirely possible that Emil Heinemann could earn himself a spot in the bottom six then, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we saw what he did last year at camp.
For sure. My problem is and Leah said this about himself, that I don't see Leah's and Emil strong enough defensively to be on the fourth line in NHL. They will probably be all right in AHL, but on that higher level where they will be outmaneuvered by one of the first two lines probably of the opposing team is not going to be good.
Well, that's, see, the, and that's where the, like I mentioned when I was projecting the lines, like there's definitely defensive issues in the bottom six on the wing. That's why I feel like Joshua White could make himself indispensable at camp, because he's very defensively capable. He does excellent work on the penalty kill. But no matter how you slice it, you're going to have some defensive issues. What if Mike Hoffman's down there? He just doesn't play defense. Yoel Armia, I mean, at one point in his career, he was decent defensively, but he's not. He doesn't appear to be good in any zone anymore. Michael Pizzetta, a good checker. He's a heavy presence. He definitely kind of gets in your face, and he's willing to fight. But is he good defensively? I would say no. And then you got Elias Anderson. You've also got Emil Heineman there as well, which, as you've confirmed, are not defensive stalwarts. I think no matter what, you're going to have some defensive issues. And I think Jake Evans is the kind of player in the middle where you can saddle him with some non-defensive line mates, and he can still give you some pretty good shifts. It takes a little bit of the defensive responsibility off whoever's on his wing, because he's so good in his own zone.
You could possibly put Dvorak out on the wing as well. And then you can put almost anyone on the other wing, because those two would be able to handle it defensively.
Fair point. I can't recall seeing Dvorak play on the wing with the Habs, though. And I certainly didn't watch him in Arizona. Nobody watches the Coyotes. So I even managed to throw a dig at the Coyotes in there. Look at me go.
I think Armia has more potential than a guy like Hoffman. Honestly, I think that he's better suited to be that kind of penalty killer bottom six guy than Hoffman is. And he had a really good world championships also. Not that that's the end all be all. I remember when we were talking about, you know, David Sklenicka having a really good world championships.
Right, I think it's more important for Armia to have it, because he needed the confidence boost.
Yes, yeah, he's a player that thrives on confidence, right? Like he can go like 30 games without a goal, and then as soon as he gets one, he has like 7 in like 5 games. Like I think that's exactly what happened last year. He didn't score, and then he couldn't stop scoring for a few games. And yeah, I think that confidence is so big for Armia. I just feel like he doesn't really trust his abilities if it's not going in. And it affects kind of other parts of his game as well. And that happens for a lot of players, but I think that Armia, if he can get a good camp going, if he's still a member of the Canadiens, can definitely be a positive contributor to the team. But I mean, there's also Owen Beck. Owen Beck is an interesting one too, because he's NHL or junior. There's no in between for him. So, you know, we saw him play an NHL game last year when the team was hit with injuries. I wonder if, let's say, Dvorak is not there at training camp, if that opens up a role at center for him, even with all the other centers. Like Matt said, one will have to be moved to wing as well. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of interesting names. You know, maybe even a guy like Mitchell Stevens or Philippe Maillet, who just signed with the Canadiens, gets a look at a fourth line role. You know, people are probably rolling their eyes, but if I would have mentioned Alex Belzile as an NHL option a year ago, people would have rolled their eyes too. So, you know, those guys too can be in the mix. A guy like Lucas Condotta, there's so many options that by default, Laval is going to have so many good forwards this year that it will be very interesting. Like I don't think that it's out of the question that a guy like Elias Anderson steps into the NHL because he's a guy that you don't necessarily want to lose on waivers either. So I think if it's close between him and somebody else, he might get that spot. But it'll be training. I think I've said this for the last few years, that training camp will be really interesting, but this year will be very interesting. Like I feel like there's gonna be a lot of competition because there's so many spots, so many guys competing for spots.
But it's also that fact that, you know, development, having a junior player like Owen Beck, as an example, play fourth line minutes rather than play top minutes in juniors or top minutes in Laval in other cases, and rather have those old timers on the main team and maybe get a trade value for them down the line. It's a 3D chess really the front office has to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. If Beck makes the team out of camp, it'll only be for 9 games or 8 games. I don't think he'll stay the entire year, unless he's just that much better than everyone else. And there's a lot of injuries, and you know, who knows? You know, if you would have asked me, 4 years ago, if Jesperi Kotkaniemi would have played the full season in the NHL, I would have said no.
He shouldn't have.
So was good that year. He was good that year. He just the issue was surrounding him. That the next offseason he got hurt and then never really recovered. There's obviously an argument for taking your time, and I'm never going to argue against that. But I don't think it's automatically bad to have him play some NHL games. But yeah, obviously the odds are stacked against him just because of all the bodies that are around, and because it's, you know, easiest to send him to junior rather than do anything else.
With Beck, I think he's better served in junior for the year. He's going to get a big opportunity with the Petes. He's going to get a big opportunity probably with Team Canada at the World Juniors also. Yeah, he was the late fill-in for Canada in the last tournament, right?
When the World Juniors is going to be down the road from where I sit right now.
Your homework is to go to the games and go talk to Owen Beck and let him know that we love him, but that we think that's where he should be this year. I think he deserves that opportunity. And look, like I said about the centers, and like the Owen Beck is one guy that I would not try to convert him to the wing. And I would stand very, very strongly against the idea of converting him to the wing. And as much as he has the ability to push for a roster spot, I think his defensive responsibility makes him a bit of a unicorn for the Habs, because he's capable of chipping in points as well, but very, very good in his own zone. As much as I think that can help him push for a roster spot, and as much as it earned him a game last year with the Habs, I don't think that unless they move multiple centers, I don't think that he could earn a spot. And I would be extremely against the idea of using him on the wing. So even if he was pushing for a roster spot to the point where he's better than a few of your wingers, I would still put him back down in junior just to give him that opportunity to go lead the Peterborough Petes, to go lead Team Canada at the World Juniors, and keep playing the position that he's meant to be playing. He's one guy that I would not under any circumstances try to put on the wing.
And we have the same problem really when it comes to defense as well, because the defense is stacked nowadays and there's all young. They might be lost on waivers. Some of them will not be lost on waivers due to the contract situations. They might go back to Europe. They might go to AHL. It's a full blown youth development program in Montreal right now, Jared.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be I don't think there's going to be any surprises this year, but when you're going next year and especially next year, like I'm talking about 24, 25, that's when somebody who has been in the NHL in the last 2 years might end up going to the AHL, and people are like, what's going on? And it's just, there's so many good bodies there. Right now, I think it's pretty set in stone who the 7 or 8 D will be to start the year. I think Matheson, Savard, Harris, Barron, Gouley, Kovacevic, Jack Eye, Weidman, that's probably going to be the 8 that they run with. They might go with 7 and send maybe a guy like Weidman down or on waivers. I don't think they'll send one of the young players down. The only ones that are waiver exempt this year are Harris, Barron, Gouley, and Jack Eye.
And Reinbacher.
Reinbacher, but I'm not sure he's even going to be in Laval this year. But obviously there's other guys like, you know, Norlander, Trudeau, Strudel, Mayu. I don't see them really competing for spots out of camp. I'm looking at the guys who are in the NHL last year, and yeah, I think it's pretty set in stone. I don't think we'll see any surprises really, unless somebody comes out of nowhere and really has a great camp. But I think the 8 or 7 that are in camp are there, and obviously leaving room for injuries or other things to happen as well.
I'd like to see David Savard out of there. I'd like to see them get a trade for him. Like they were able to move on from Edmondson. I'd like to see David Savard get out of there as well. I think that would open up some space, and then that would give an opportunity to maybe somebody to perhaps surprise. I agree with Weidman to waivers. That makes sense. I'd really like to see them do something with David Savard to open up one of those opportunities. I think we've seen enough of him. I don't think he's part of the rebuild. I don't think he's going to be around when this team's ready to compete. And I don't think there's any value in continuing to see him take up a roster spot and take up minutes when we know that that's the case, when we know that he's not going to be around when the team's ready to compete.
If that happens, I completely disagree though, because the you look at the guys who would take that spot, there's nobody ready right now to take that spot. Like, would you really want to throw a Reinbacher or a Mayu or a Struble into that spot?
Well, that's
I think we're a year away from looking at David Savard.
That's why you have Chris Weidman in the organization in the first place, right? To be your extra guy that you can throw in there.
It's not about being an extra guy. It's about you need somebody to take those 20, 25 minutes that Savard plays. And Weidman can't even do that. And I don't think you can throw or count on those guys. Obviously, if something happens where there's an injury, you know, you have no choice. But I think we're still a year away from that being a possibility, personally.
I don't know, man. I'd rather, because I think Weidman can skate the 20 minutes, right? Can he do it in a way that actually, you know, defends and keeps the puck out of your net more often than not? Maybe not. But I don't think, like, do we give a shit if the team's losing more games than they win? All that's going to do is give them another good draft pick. And worst case scenario, they lose more games than they win as a result of Chris Weidman biting off a little bit more than he can chew. Personally, for me, I'd rather see somebody else get an opportunity on the third pair than continue to see David Savard on the top. I don't think, like, sure, he's eating 20 minutes, but, like, again, not to just sit here and dump on the guy, but I don't see the advantage at this point. I'd rather see somebody else get a shot at lesser minutes, spread the minutes out more, and do what you can to give a younger guy a shot.
He's not taking a spot away from anybody on the right side, though. That's the thing, is like, you have the only guy that you they have on the right side right now, they have Savard, Barron, Kovacevic, Weidman. So I mean, you know, he's taking, like, I think that we agree that Mayu shouldn't be playing 20 minutes a night in the NHL right away, at least not until we see what he can do at camp. I don't think it's fair to pencil him right now doing that, but I think that Savard's kind of been a spot where Edmondson was last year. Like, I don't think he's excess yet. I think that probably when there's a year left on his contract, like with Edmondson, and once the other guys have another year of experience, like, I think by next year, not this coming year, but the year after, I think you're looking at Reinbacher being in the NHL. I think you're looking at potentially Mayu being in the NHL, potentially Struble being in the NHL. There's another guy in Boston University who's a defenseman. His name escapes me right now, but he might be under contract that year. So I think that yes, you know, long term, David Savard is not the answer. I just don't see a reason to trade him right now at the deadline potentially. Yes, you know, there could be an opportunity depending how the young guys develop, but I don't think that you're in a position to create a spot for a young guy right now. I think the eight that they have in the NHL picture is fine the way it is. I don't think, unlike the forwards, where you have guys like Hua, Farrell, Heinemann, who are really pushing it, Ullinen, Harvey Pinard, who are pushing at that spot and ready for the NHL, I don't see that on the defense this year, but you know, in a couple of months into the season, or especially in 24-25, I think that's when you look at it.
Interesting discussion. I'm sure you're going to fill up the comments with even more of an interesting discussion in regards to lineups. They're always popping lineups in there, and that's how we got this idea. You've been listening to Absent Minded with Jared Book, with Matt Drake, and with me, Patrick Bexel. Subscribe, leave a comment. We'll try to work our way into the comments and answer any questions you might have. Enjoy the rest of the summer. We will be back with as often as we can, but we're not sure how often that will be until the top 25, under 25 jumps out. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys for listening.